Lewis Hamilton, Abu Dhabi 21. Lewis Hamilton, China 2024, Q3 qualifying for the sprint race, which will be held tomorrow. There was Lewis. He just got the pole, seemingly got the pole in his Mercedes. George Russell hadn't even got through to Q3. Lewis loving the concept and then the feel of putting on the intermediates as the drizzle became harder going into Q3, going out, going off a couple of times on his out lap, and then putting in a really good lap, seemingly to get the pole, finally with a car that was drivable, had some tire temperature, had some predictability, allowed him to do what he, Lewis Hamilton, can do, despite a lot of people saying out there, has he lost his tire? Is he over the hill? Lewis Hamilton driving just as well as he's ever driven throughout his Formula One career, in my opinion, and the way it looked. On the pole in the closing milliseconds of Q3, but then Lando Norris in the McLaren, equally brilliant in the McLaren, gotta say, looked fabulous, had a lap time that was deleted, then reinstated. I've never seen anything like this. It was all blink and you missed it. Lando was on the pole, then his lap time was deleted, Lewis was on the pole, and then Lando got the pole back. Reinstated? Never seen that before. That is unbelievable. We saw him on the lap in which there was a deletion. He ran wide coming out of the last corner, as did several others. Added Max Verstappen, for example. But the regulations for the Chinese Grand Prix, if you read the small print, say that if a car runs wide at turn 6 and turn 16, the two corners they were looking at, only the lap time of that specific lap was going to be deleted. Because at some circuits, Austria and Austin, very good example, by deliberately running wide, coming out of the last corner, getting that lap deleted, you can actually then get a better run as you cross the start-finish line. And so to stop that happening, the regulations for those races in general say that the following lap will be deleted as well. But in China, with different circuit, obviously, with gravel on the outside of 16, it was deemed that there would be no advantage if you ran wide. So you just got that lap deleted and not the next lap. And that's what they did generally. That's what happened with Max Verstappen. He ran wide, but they were able to then count his next lap and he got in and he qualified fourth. But with Lando Norris, they, for some reason, deleted the next lap, which is not correct in view of what was in the race notes from the race director. So they then reinstated him. It seems like a relatively small mistake. When you think of the number of fans out there on the global platform who perhaps are Lewis Hamilton fans or indeed Lando Norris fans watching this, 1 minute it's ecstasy, the next minute it is, oh, what's happened here? And that's not a good look, obviously, for the sport. And I'm sure there'll be repercussions from this. There'll be further examination of what happened. But for some inexplicable reason, somebody in the FIA decided to delete Lando's lap time when it shouldn't have been deleted, his pole lap, which was a clean lap, of course. And that is something that will echo on, I think. And I'm presuming McLaren did a very good job of complaining about it the minute or the millisecond that lap was deleted. Somebody at McLaren did a really good job and got to the stewards and said, no, that should not have been deleted. He's got the pole now. And the stewards listened to them and went back. A little bit like the perhaps what was going on behind the scenes in Abu Dhabi 21. And as I say, it's Lewis twice now. He must be thinking, what will Lewis be thinking? He'd be thinking, well, you know, this is just life, isn't it? Normal. He's probably thinking, yeah, I'm pretty pleased actually to be on the front row. Even if I'm not on the pole, I'm on the front row. George didn't even make it through to Q3, which is important these days, of course, in terms of Lewis and George and the status there. And he's got a car in the wet anyway, in the wet on intermediates, not complete wet, but wet on intermediates, where Lewis Hamilton can show his talent. And in a car that was obviously quite reasonable, did the lap time. So Lando and Lewis on the front row going into the sprint race. And here I got to say and confess, I have been a major critic of the sprint concept since it was introduced. I'm still not 100% convinced about it. But having said all of that, if we hadn't had sprint qualifying today, it would have been a pretty dismal Friday in China, because it would have been FP2, it would have started to rain, everybody would have stayed in the garage, it would have been very little action for the fans to enjoy. The fans, let's just talk about the fans. Lots of camera shots of the full grandstands opposite the pits, and lots of fever there for Guanyu Zhou, deservedly so. He got through into Q3, did a really good job, actually got into Q3 at the expense of George Russell, who will start the sprint race from P11. But having said that, it doesn't look to me as if there's still a massive crowd there. We've got a big crowd opposite the start-finish line, but you look at some of the other grandstands outside of Turn 1 and other places on the circuit, they're still pretty empty, which is surprising because it's a great circuit and there's lots to watch there. Anyway, that's we'll see. It's better than it's ever been. There's a good atmosphere in China, which is good. The other thing I should say, there were two grass fires today as well. One of them delayed FP1, the morning session, and one of them delayed the start of Q2. And you said, grass fires, what's going on? It's not even exactly hot in China at the moment, 20 degrees ambient. But the problem is, interestingly, sparks from the cars landing on the grass and igniting the grass. First time we've seen that happen in Formula One as well. Maybe that was just a precursor of what was going to happen later in qualifying. So where are we going into the sprint race? Well, in terms of performance, as predicted, Red Bull very good in a straight line relative to their serious opposition, Ferrari, Aston Martin, McLaren, Mercedes as well, I guess. So they're looking good. The car, the Red Bull wasn't brilliant out of the box in FP1, but then nobody was brilliant out of the box. It was very low grip levels, very difficult to really tell what the car was doing. Everybody except Fernando and the two Mercedes ran softs at the end of FP1. Mercedes never really seemed happy with the handling and the balance of the car on the grip level, so they were still working away. Fernando, not quite sure why he didn't run softs anyway, but he didn't. But he did a really good job in qualifying, like Lewis, like Lando, really enjoying the wet conditions, eager to get out there. I've got to give credit here to Lando and Fernando, both for doing 5 laps, 1 lap more than most of their opposition on those intermediates, just getting in enough laps to make sure that as the track dried, which obviously it was getting quicker towards the end, that they were out there running. And that's one of the reasons Lando was so quick by such a margin on his last flying lap. So full credit to the organization at McLaren for doing that. Whilst Lando was on a flyer going into one, Red Bull was still sort of puttering out of the pit lane going into Q3. Little bit slow, I think, and had Max had one more lap, maybe he would have done it as well, because he was right there. Having said that, Max did complain at the end of Q3 of the engine cutting out a little bit on some parts of the lap. So maybe we should bring that in, maybe we shouldn't. McLaren, despite Lando being characteristically pessimistic going into China, saying he didn't think the car would go that well around Shanghai because it's not very good on long corners. As I pointed out in the live stream yesterday, I think he was going to be in for a pleasant surprise, because I don't think anybody's going to be great or is great around the long corners of Shanghai. This is the nature of the game with bouncing and with these ground effect cars. And sure enough, the McLaren, no worse and actually quite good in all the change of direction areas, and not too bad on the straight either relative to Mercedes. And Ferrari, actually not far away from Ferrari. So a McLaren better, I suspect, than they thought they were going to be. Not difficult to have predicted that. And then Lando doing a really good job. I think one of the surprises of qualifying was Oscar Piastri, because he was really good in FP1, got the most from the car on the soft tires, got a good run. And in Q1, Oscar was P5, 2/10 slower than Lando. And in Q2, Oscar was 4th, 2/10 quicker than Lando. So Oscar Piastri looked to be right there, really for the first time this year, right up there with Lando. And then Q3 came. It was Lando who was out there making a few mistakes, but then putting in that brilliant pole lap right at the end. And Oscar at that point in the pits. So yeah, again, a rather weird finishing end to qualifying for Oscar Piastri. And he'll be disappointed with that for sure, because he definitely had the pace to be right up there, maybe top 3. As it is, he'll be starting only P8. Disappointing for him. Fernando Alonso will be starting 3rd in the Aston Martin. Again, conditions that really suit the approach to life of Fernando Alonso. Let's throw in a variable. Let's have some rain. Let's get on to intermediates. And there's Fernando doing a really good job. He will say, I'm sure that he got the best from the car. And as I say, like Lando, he got 5 laps out of those intermediates as well. One of them a slow lap, obviously, but you have to take that into account with those that did only 4s as well. So Fernando doing a good job judging and pacing Q3, and a just reward to be 3rd. Lance Stroll, quickest in FP1 this morning. The car pretty good out of the box. That's an indication of how good the sweet spot is on Aston Martin these days, and how well they do in terms of setup for the car at a circuit that nobody had been to for a long, long time, certainly not in the current era. But Lance Stroll again faded badly in qualifying, complaining of a lack of grip, lack of balance. We've seen that a lot with Stroll in recent times. Suddenly he's got a perfect car, almost perfect car, great balance. And then new set of tyres, a couple of hours have passed and the car has lost its feel, lost its grip. Seems to happen to Lance a little bit too often, whether it's him, whether it's the team, whether it's the car, very difficult to say, but it's very strange after being quickest in FP1 to see Lance Stroll not even making it through into Q3. Red Bull start the sprint race P4, P6 with Max and Sergio Perez. I don't think they'll be too worried about that. We still have another qualifying session tomorrow for the race proper, and the cars are not in parc fermé for the race. Those are the changes that have been made to the regulations for 2024. A good thing. So you can look back at what happened today, make adjustments, and obviously that will happen in the case of Red Bull. Ferrari continued with their momentum for a while. Charles Leclerc, as predicted yesterday, looking pretty sharp in terms of one lap performance now. He was comfortably into Q2. Q2, he was actually second to Max Verstappen. You thought, oh, well, this is the order kind of back where we know and where it's been. Charles Leclerc right there with somewhere near Max. And then Q3 came and you could see Charles was going out maybe to get the pole, fired up. He'd gone really well in Q2. And he went off. And he was the only one that actually damaged the car going off. And it was not a good look for Charles Leclerc. Again, a mistake. Just got the power down too aggressively. Lost the back end. Spun onto the grass and touched the wall. He kept going. He managed to get back onto the track again. But there was some damage. And, of course, that was really effectively the end of his challenge in terms of getting a decent grid spot. I suspect he'll still be really quick tomorrow in qualifying, assuming he makes no more mistakes. But that was not a good thing for Charles to have done. Potentially, he could have been on the front row today, I think. And for him to make yet another mistake, it will eat away any self-confidence for sure, but he needs to put it behind him or have a good race tomorrow to obliterate that. So he starts P7, Carlos Sainz P5. I don't think either Ferrari driver really got the tyres up to temperature. There were various ways you could do it. You could do a quick lap, then slow. You could do two quick laps, whatever. But they didn't get the tyres working correctly. And they won't be that upset about it. Everybody went into that intermediate wet session blind. And not to get tyre temperatures, I suppose, is one of the risks that you're going to face in these days of lack of testing and everything else. But whereas Mercedes got it right, as I said yesterday in the live stream, magically, sometimes if there are a lot of variables out there and there's no data from which to rely because we're at a new track, a team like Mercedes might suddenly just get it right. And that's what happened in Q3 with Lewis, with Mercedes. Not to detract from Lewis's driving, but obviously they got that sweet spot. Whereas Ferrari did not do a good job today in the wet on intermediates of getting those tyres up to temperature in the right rate and into the right slot. And then 9th and 10th, reflecting the upgrades in Melbourne and Japan, Steak Sauber done a very good job. 9th and 10th, both of them into Q3. Valtteri just ahead of Guanyu Zhou, but that'll be great for the Chinese fans and for Formula One in China because we haven't had a Chinese driver before. And there he is getting into Q3. Really good job by Guanyu. But Valtteri also looking very professional, I thought, and very sharp in the Steak Sauber. And I suppose there's a certain... What is there? I mean, Lewis, not only did Lewis, in sort of rerun of Abu Dhabi 21, it was Lewis that lost the pole in this occasion due to an FIA glitch, but also quite interesting that the driver that Lewis wanted to keep, Valtteri Bottas, beat the driver that Mercedes eventually hired, George Russell, into Q3. That's a little cameo of China versus Abu Dhabi 21, I suppose you could say. So there we are. It's looking like overall Red Bulls still have that sweet spot. They have top speed, just enough top speed to be right there and be super competitive against all their opposition. Ferrari looked good, but didn't really get it together today. Didn't do a great job. McLaren continue to show that they're not only running a very good car now with, and Lando may not agree with this, but very good downforce. Not great top speed. That's the one area where they need to improve without losing downforce. But also know how to run that car in the pit lane and get the best from it under pressure with all the changing variables. Well, on the Lando car anyway, not necessarily Oscar's. And very good job again by good old Fernando Alonso, who just looked like the race driver he's always been. Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, two members of the old guard, both showing all their skill and flair today when the rain fell in China and neutralized the current state of Formula One. Great to see. Look forward to that sprint race tomorrow. I never thought I would say that, but I do look forward to it. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how Max paces the race, because he won't want to get involved in anything. He won't want to put too much through that car. He's got a Grand Prix to try to win on Sunday. But for Lewis and Lando, Fernando, there's a real opportunity out there to get some headlines, to win a race, win a Formula One race in 2024. Amazing. Anyway, we'll see you then. Thanks for watching, and we'll be back tomorrow with our summary of what happened in the sprint race and then in qualifying for the 2024 Chinese Grand Prix. Big thanks to Jetcraft and to Pitbox, and to you too. See you then. Lando Norris was relatively slow to react to the lights going out for the sprint race, and so his pole disappeared effectively in the first 10 metres. Lewis Hamilton alongside him made a fabulous start in the Mercedes. Side by side into that famous turn one, lots of room going in, and you couldn't blame Lando for just staying there on the outside. Lewis had the inside running because he'd got the better run down into turn one. Lando on the outside, and his thinking was, well, there's a left-hander at the end of all this. If I can stay there on the outside, I could still be on the inside for that left-hander. I could still take the lead. You can kind of sympathize with him, having got the pole and having lost it so quickly. That was what was in his mind. But two-thirds of the way through that long right-hander, he just basically ran out of grip, ran wide, and he was quite lucky to be able to shuffle back into the traffic about P6 alongside Charles Leclerc. At that point, was middle of the road, so there's a little bit of a slot there, but it was a dodgy thing because he could have seen more cars than that go past. Anyway, for Lando Norris, that sprint race effectively over in the first couple of seconds. But for Lewis Hamilton, absolute nirvana. Nobody in front of him, clear track, and leading the sprint race. He started to pull away and everything looked good. Everybody was on medium tyres, apart from Lewis's teammate, George Russell, who, qualifying where he did, not having made it through to Q3, P11, took the gamble, as Mercedes often do. We talked about this in the live stream, and just put him on a different tyre strategy to see what would happen. In this case, the soft red tyre. Big question mark about whether that tyre, of course, would last the full 19 laps of the sprint race. Anyway, Lewis in front, looking really good. Fernando Alonso had also benefited from that moment with Lando Norris and had slotted into second place. So the interesting thing in the first couple of laps was to see if Fernando could do anything about the Mercedes. The Aston Martin, pretty quick in a straight line, but even with DRS, unable to do anything about Lewis. Lewis driving in a very composed and relaxed way, looking very good, pulling away slightly from Fernando Alonso and the Aston Martin, and then in P3, an ominous P3 for everybody else. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, just looking very calm, not even touching the curbs, looking after the tyres in this early stage of the race, followed by Carlos Sainz, who drove a very aggressive first couple of corners, had got in front of Sergio Perez, some nice outside overtakes and moves there. Typical Carlos Sainz of recent times, really good. Contained aggression, I think is what you could say. After that, Sergio Perez, who had been consumped by Carlos, as I say, and then Charles Leclerc, who had managed to keep that position from Lando Norris, as charging as hard as he could. And the McLaren, still obviously a very good car, but Lando beside himself, I imagine, with frustration and probably rage, I would guess. Anyway, the race began to take shape when Fernando's tyres started to go off. And at this point, Max, who had been cruising, really, and everybody thinking, wow, is Max Verstappen going to finish only third? Does he have a problem? Got to say, he did have that engine misfire in qualifying for the sprint race yesterday, as I mentioned. And overnight, they'd changed the number 4 spark plug in the power unit, the Red Bull powertrain Honda power unit. We don't often hear about spark plugs being changed, but that's what it was, spark plug. Back to the old Ron Toranak, Jack Brabham, we can fix it days. Anyway, the car now unsung. He didn't have any battery in the first couple of laps, but they managed to sort that out as well with radio transmissions and the pushing of the appropriate toggle on the steering wheel. Max Verstappen started to close in on Fernando, and as he normally does, hadn't got within DRS range, just did him at the end of the long back straight. There was no waiting around, and suddenly Max was up to P2. Lewis was leading by about 2.5-3 seconds at this point, still looking quite good, but he'd already started to radio that he was losing grip, particularly on slow speed corners, and it was only a matter of laps before Max was on him as well. He looked after the tyres so well, and anyway, he had more downforce. He could do more with his tyre management. He had a bigger sweet spot, and he was just right up there in a straight line as well. So he quickly caught Lewis. There was a rather pathetic attempt to say to Lewis on the radio, oh, Max is behind you, Lewis, to which he replied, yeah, I know, I can see him. That has to go under the heading of one of the most unnecessary radio messages of all time, I suspect. Anyway, Max onto Lewis. reverse, lost no time again, right down the inside at the end of the back straight into the hairpin. Left his braking pretty late to do that. Lewis braked late as well. There were no lockups. He had locked up the previous lap as it happened, but on this lap, Lewis braking pretty late to give it as hard a task as possible to Max, but Max did it beautifully and thereafter just pulled away. So it was a Max Verstappen win in the sprint race, going away, as they say, with the car in perfect shape, perfect balance, perfect use of the tyres, perfect judgment of the race, nothing to fluster him early on, as ever, and a well-deserved victory for Max Verstappen. Lewis, absolutely delighted to be P2, nonetheless, to have beaten everybody else. Well, for P3, there was definitely a motor race. Pressing pause for a second, I've often criticised sprint races. As I said yesterday, quite pleased to have had one because qualifying in the wet was enthralling yesterday, and nobody would have been out had there been no sprint this weekend. And the sprint race was interesting to watch in terms of how the cars performed without much practice and testing behind them. That was a good thing about it. But here I'm getting to my other bete noire, which is DRS. Max didn't need DRS to get past Fernando Alonso or Lewis Hamilton. It made the job easier for him, obviously, but he didn't need it. He was going to pass them anyway, for sure. And then for third place, there was a massive battle. And you'd think there, well, this is what DRS is supposed to be all about. This is where we can get some overtaking. But they're all clogged up behind Fernando Alonso's Aston Martin. Carlos Sainz could do nothing about him, even with DRS. Everybody else was in the DRS train anyway. And so DRS was completely nullified by that battle for P3. And it didn't actually produce any overtaking at all. So end of my rant about DRS. But I'll just finish it by saying, if we'd had no DRS, the result of the sprint race would have been no different at all. Anyway, getting back to that battle for P3, it was Fernando Alonso, basically, with Carlos Sainz, Sergio Perez, Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, all stacked up behind him. Carlos Sainz definitely had the pace, definitely could have driven faster had Fernando not been there. And as the last few laps approached, Fernando's tyres deteriorated more. There was more deg on the Aston Martin, and Carlos was all over him. But where to get him? Because he obviously couldn't get him with DRS, as I say, at the end of the straight. So he did what he'd been doing in the early laps, and he started using bits of outside road. And I thought it was one of the most audacious and spectacular pieces of driving I've seen for a long time, was Carlos on the outside of Fernando Alonso. These two Spaniards, as I say, I'm not sure there's much love lost between them now as well. Carlos on the outside going into turn 7, which is the corner I talked about in the live stream, what I think the most dramatic corner in Shanghai. We're talking, okay, they weren't doing 170 miles an hour on medium tyres at that stage of the race. They're probably doing 150, 155 miles an hour. He's around the outside of Fernando Alonso there. Unbelievable commitment and skill level and feel, you got to say. And he pulled it off. He was on the outside. He was then on the inside for the next right-hander. And then it all went wrong because Fernando, whether it was just being passed by Carlos Sainz specifically, or whether it was just being nobody should be able to pass me on the outside of that very quick corner, that's my corner, we then just basically drove into Carlos Sainz. They touched. Fernando got a puncture as a result. Carlos ran wide, and Sergio Perez zapped down the inside to take a very clear and easy P3. It would have been P3 right through to the finish. Carlos's car was obviously slightly damaged, and his teammate Charles Leclerc, obviously keen to do well, had got the DRS on Carlos on the straight, on that lap, on the back straight. And as they went into the hairpin, Carlos defended down the inside. Charles Leclerc went to the outside, had a better car by now, had more grip. They both braked really late. And Carlos, mid-corner, no surprise with the tyres at that stage of the race, ran wide, lost grip, and effectively pushed Charles Leclerc off the track. I suspect amongst all the Ferrari fans, there will be quite a lot of chat about that. Interestingly, it was not an incident that was brought to the attention of the stewards, unlike the Alonso-Carlos Sainz one. And so I think that's a good thing. You know, it's two teammates, two Ferrari drivers. Let Ferrari sort it out. I can't imagine Charles was that happy about it, but I can imagine that Carlos Sainz afterwards would have said, look, I'm really sorry. I was down the inside. I lost grip. I'm sorry, Charles. And I'm sure there'll be no massively ill feeling there over and above the feeling that's there already, which is that Carlos Sainz is doing a good enough job to have kept his Ferrari drive, and he hasn't kept it, and he's leaving at the end of the year. So that's always the underlying tone of anything that happens at Ferrari now. Anyway, Charles did get Carlos, of course, and finished a good fourth. Carlos was fifth, ahead of the two McLarens. George Russell eventually finished eighth. A good drive on the soft tyres. They didn't go off. Amazing performance. Obviously, the track is picking up grip. Guanyu Zhou delighted the fans by finishing ninth. And Kevin Magnussen drove really well, I thought, in the Haas Ferrari to finish 10th. So that was a sprint race. Disappointing for Lando Norris. For Max Verstappen, yet another win, a beautifully judged win. But for Lewis Hamilton, a place on the podium, a taste of what it's like to lead a Formula One race again. Unusual situation in Shanghai today, with all the teams and drivers going from a race into qualifying for another race. Anyway, that's what we had on Saturday, the sprint race, and then followed by qualifying for the official Chinese Grand Prix, which will take place tomorrow, of course. Max Verstappen on the pole, basically carrying on where he left off from the sprint race, looked in control of qualifying from beginning to end. The Red Bull, superb now. As we said, at the beginning of Friday, it was a clean sheet of paper virtually for every team and every driver. Nobody really knew what to expect from the circuit. And there were always going to be variables in there which might suit some team that managed to get them right. I'd say Aston Martin are pretty near to having achieved that. Ferrari haven't got it quite right. McLaren looking pretty good. Mercedes way off the pace. But for Red Bull, of course, with the size of their sweet spot, they can adjust the car in a way that other teams cannot without losing top speed. And that's what we saw in qualifying. Max just getting quicker and quicker. Going into Q3, the wind had got up a bit. He's a little bit taken aback by how the track had changed in Q3. It got a little bit slower. But then he compensated for that in the second run. Absolutely brilliant second run. Sergio Perez certainly underlining the performance of the RB20. And again, doing a very good job under pressure. He's had his own issues this weekend. He's made a few mistakes. But when the pressure mounted in the sprint race, he did well to finish P3, getting away from the traffic. And in qualifying for the Grand Prix, he lines up alongside Max on the front row. Perfect result for Red Bull. Fernando Alonso qualified second for the sprint race and now third in qualifying for the Grand Prix. Excellent performance for Aston Martin. As I say, they've really got their setup almost perfect for this circuit. Probably by judgment more than luck, knowing the people there. Really, really good work, and great work by Fernando Alonso as well. Shame for him, of course, that he had that very frustrating race in the sprint, getting the puncture towards the end, and three more points on his license, which added to the three he got in Melbourne, means he's now got 6 out of 12. So Fernando needs to keep his hands relatively clean for the rest of the year. Anyway, forgetting about all that, Fernando looking really good, got the best, but it was very, very tight. Let's have a look at the graphic, which shows how tight it was between Aston Martin, McLaren and Ferrari, and where the differences were between the teams and the drivers. So you can see there clearly the driver on the left, then the lap time that gave them their grid position, the speed trap on that lap, and then the three sector times. Makes interesting reading if you look at it closely. Max, 33.6, Sergio Perez, 33.9. So in terms of the driver doing his job, 0.3 quicker, virtually the same through the speed trap, virtually the same through sector one, Max slightly quicker sector two. That's that sector that I've talked about a lot that contains turn seven. Really impressive corner. It is 170 miles an hour, as we talked about in the live stream, with Pirelli softs on and light load of fuel. Very impressive. And then Max carrying that through into sector three, which is predominantly the back straight, but it's also that very technical section as they come out of the hairpin and then into that last corner, that last left-hander, really, really important corner, obviously, in terms of getting that pace as they cross the start-finish line. Interesting to see both Max and Perez very disciplined in keeping the car absolutely to the right, parallel to the exit curb or the white line. There's no exit curb there as they go across the start-finish line, just to minimize any G going through the engine before they move it across. So yeah, really nice piece of work by Max. Got to say, it was really sector two. That is the class sector for any driver, and that's where Max showed up over Sergio Perez, not detracting from the job Perez did today in the number two Red Bull. Fernando Alonso, 34.1. Look how virtually the same time as Lando Norris in the McLaren. So how was Fernando different? Well, as we saw in the sprint race, lots of top speed on the Aston Martin this weekend. Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari with DRS, unable to get past Fernando on the straight in the sprint. And there, look at it, 3.34. That's Red Bull top speed. Lando Norris, 3.30. Oscar Piastri, 3.28. So a big difference between McLaren and Aston Martin in terms of top speed. That may be a problem for McLaren in the race tomorrow, even if they're in better shape in terms of tyre deck. Sector 1, virtually the same for all three drivers, if we include the two McLaren drivers with Fernando there. Second sector, interesting to see that Oscar Piastri was the quicker of the three drivers we're talking about at the moment through Sector 2. No surprise there, really. He is really quick. But look where Piastri lost it, Sector 3, and that's probably because of his top speed, 3.28, slower than Lando, and, 6 kilometres an hour slower than Fernando Alonso. So Piastri probably running more downforce, maybe just more front flap, something like that, and that's hurt him in terms of top speed, hurt him a little bit over the lap, but gives him a bigger sweet spot, you could say, because if you're very good in Sector 2, it means you've got really good grip and balance, and that's an interesting comparison, I think, between the two McLaren drivers. Now let's have a look at Ferrari. A difficult day for Ferrari, Q2. Carlos Sainz did a little bit of an Antonio Giovinazzi coming out of that last corner. We've talked about that in the live stream as well. No curb there, it's all gravel. And the way Carlos drives, where he does load the car up more on exit than, say, a Max Verstappen or even a Charles, who gets the car a little bit straighter mid-corner. Carlos relies on these long arcs and he's got the power on full. And if he just gets it slightly wrong, it's just going to do what we saw. He got into the gravel, spun the car around. He did a very good job, actually, of hitting the outside wall, broadside, skated across the grass, damaged the nose, and you thought, wow, that's probably going to be quite a big one. But astonishingly, he did a really good job to get the car back onto the track and drive it back to the pits, albeit with completely damaged front nose, obviously flat spotted tyres. Came in, and Ferrari got the car out and ready for him to put in a lap. He hadn't done a lap by then. 6 minutes to go, went out and got comfortably into Q3. So really good job by Ferrari and Carlos Sainz to do that under pressure. Again, lots of pressure on Carlos Sainz. He doesn't need additional pressure like that. So going into Q3, really close between Charles Leclerc and Carlos. Leclerc just got him. Let's see where he got him. They both did 34.2, but there's a shade of difference. Carlos appears to be running slightly less wing, so he's bit quicker on the straight, 3.31, 3.33, almost there with Red Bull and Aston Martin. Charles Leclerc was never really brilliant through Sector 1. He talked about that quite a lot, which is the long right-hander and then the sort of technical bit afterwards. Carlos really good there. And thereafter, though, Charles very good in Sector 2 and both of them equal in Sector 3. So almost the same. I got to say, overall, very good performance by Carlos Sainz to be right there, despite that shunt, with Charles Leclerc. Overall, a disappointing performance from Ferrari relative to the speed of Aston Martin and McLaren. And you can only put that down to, well, I can only put it down to this weekend being 1 hour of unofficial practice, the Ferrari not being very good, not being anything like as well set up for the circuit as, say, Aston Martin were. And then having to work really hard to try to get that balance in the middle of qualifying for the sprint, racing in the sprint, and now qualifying for the Grand Prix. Not a lot of time to play around with the car and to get it right. Whereas Aston Martin arrived at the circuit with a better setup for sure for their car. And I think that's what we're seeing. We shouldn't read too much into that difference. I don't think the groundswell is changing in Formula One away from Ferrari. I think it's just this one-off weekend where there's just no time to get the car right. And here, they didn't get it quite right, as shown by some of the mistakes being made by the drivers as well. It's obviously quite an edgy car to drive here. George Russell, well, let's talk about Mercedes. I mean, what a disaster. Carlos Sainz's shunt and then recovering from that shunt was one big story from qualifying. The other was Lewis Hamilton not making it out of Q1. Now, he went into his second run on a new set of tyres. You'd imagine at that point, if he'd had an issue in that first lap, he'd be up in the top six. But he never made it into Q2. What a set of contrasts for Mercedes. Yesterday, momentarily, they were on the pole for the sprint race. They started from the front row. Lewis finished a very, very good second, having led the race. And now, he's not even out of Q1 in qualifying for the Grand Prix. So let's have a look and see what happened for Lewis there. 35.5 was his fastest lap. I mean, bear in mind, this is Q1, so that's the difference isn't as big as what we're seeing there, because those are Q3 times for the drivers above him. 3.30 top speed. That's a little bit slower than George Russell, but again, they were running a little bit slower in Q1, so he's not really off in terms of top speed. 25.2 Sector 1, that was pretty good, given that he was doing it in Q1. 28.6 in Sector 2, that shows there's something there that isn't quite right with the balance and the feel of the car for Lewis Hamilton. But the worst thing is that 41.6. That's what prevented him getting through into Q2, that 41.6. That was a lock-up going into the hairpin and then very slow out of the hairpin and not having enough momentum for the last part of the sector anyway. So that 41.6, call it a driver error from Lewis Hamilton. Was it under pressure? In effect, yes, because Mercedes made a lot of changes to their car after the sprint race. They had, as we heard from Lewis, not great grip level through the slower speed corners. And obviously they tried to improve in that area, maybe with ride heights, maybe with flap. And they just lost the balance. It just shows more than anything how small the operating sweet spot is at Mercedes. You go, you've got it almost right, you try to improve it, and you go completely over the cliff. And that's where Red Bull score. They have much more room in which to maneuver when they want to do setup changes. And we saw that today. And call it pressure, call it the time frame of this Chinese Grand Prix, but it's enough for Lewis Hamilton to go from the front row of the grid effectively to the back of the grid in 24 hours. George Russell's performance did pretty well. I mean, he'll be buoyed by making it through to Q3, I guess. You know, where a Mercedes when making it to Q3 is actually a good thing for them. I mean, it's how things have changed is just ridiculous. 34.433 lap. I mean, that's well away from Ferrari. This is George Russell we're talking about. But I should point out that George only had one new set of soft tyres to take into Q3, like Nico Hülkenberg. And when they were both out on scrub tyres, Nico was actually slightly quicker than George. Okay, George went quicker on the new set in the final run in Q3. But that gives some indication, I think, of where Mercedes are at the moment. 3.33 top speed, very good top speed. I mean, you could argue from that maybe they're not running enough downforce. Maybe they should be sort of, we've said this before, maybe they should be running sort of McLaren level of downforce and giving themselves more grip. 25.1, sector one, not brilliant. Sort of Charles Leclerc, who's not very happy with sector one. 28.4 for George Russell in sector two. Really quick corners, including turn seven. So that shows just underlying the grip and balance problems of the Mercedes. And 40.7, there or thereabouts in sector three. No surprise there, because they're pretty quick in a straight line. Nico Hülkenberg made it through to the top 10 for Haas Ferrari. We're continuing to praise that team. What a great job they've done. Going into 2024, right from the start, they've been competitive. And again, they got the setup more or less right for that car. Bear in mind that they're not a front-running team in terms of the data that they have on which to rely. They're doing an excellent job with setup, excellent job with execution. Nico Hülkenberg, 34.6. So yeah, 0.2 away from George Russell from the factory Mercedes. Yeah, okay, fair enough. 3.36 in a straight line though. Look how quick. He was quickest of all in a straight line through the speed trap at the end of the back straight. Doesn't seem to be anything they can do about that. It seems that even if they add downforce, they're still really quick in a straight line, which suggests that maybe the car's not that aerodynamically efficient. No surprise there, because, you know, it is a Haas Dallara Ferrari, not in any way being critical of them, but, you know, they don't have the resources of the big teams. 24.9 sector one, he's right there. 28.5 sector two, okay, yeah, lacking a little bit of grip and balance. 40.9 sector three, even though they're quick in a straight line, would suggest that maybe that he's overusing the tires a little bit for the car they have, and the tires have probably gone off by the end of that lap. Finally, Valtteri Bottas. Excellent performance by Valtteri in the Stake Sauber. Very professional job. Great to see them making Q3, 34.6. Virtually the same lap time as Nico Hülkenberg. 3.30 in a straight line. Yep, they've sacrificed some of their top speed to give themselves a little bit more downforce. That's the upgrades stepping in and coming into play. 25.0 sector one. Yep, Carlos Sainz territory, 28.4. Not bad. George Russell territory for sector two. George Russell, of course, the driver that replaced Valtteri at Mercedes. 40.9 sector three. Yeah, not brilliant. Again, probably overusing the tyres a little bit like Nico Hülkenberg. But from where they were, great result by Stake Sauber. Other interesting results. Daniel Ricciardo, I thought, did a good job. Out-qualified Yuki Tsunoda. Yuki's been struggling with his car all weekend. And as he came in at the end of Q1, not able to get into Q2, he said, you know, I drove a really good lap then. I can't believe that it's P19. There must be something wrong with this car. So maybe there is. Maybe it's a chassis thing. Who knows? But Daniel Ricciardo looking like Daniel Ricciardo, actually, doing a really good job with the engineers, working on little details and getting his car into Q2. So all credit to him. Guanyu Zhou on this occasion didn't get out of Q1, but the fans still love him anyway. But both Alpines got into Q2, first time that's happened this year. So a little bit of progress there, but sunk without trace as Q2 headed towards the last few minutes going into Q3. So signs of promise at Alpine, but shouldn't get too excited just yet. Max Verstappen on the pole. Sergio Perez protecting him, if you like, going into turn one. Looks to be a walkover race for Red Bull. Don't despair. I'm sure it won't be boring. I'm sure there'll be lots of stuff going on. It's a difficult circuit over a full Grand Prix distance, and there will be incidents. There probably will be safety cars. So watch for all that. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Thanks for watching. Thanks to Jetcraft. Thanks to Pitbox. IO, see you then. Another race, another win for Max Verstappen. But every Grand Prix victory has its own taste, has its own feel. And sure enough, this was very different from anything Max had achieved before. Obviously in China, very impressive display from beginning to end. Winning the sprint race from P4 on the grid, taking the pole for the Grand Prix, and then effectively leading the Grand Prix from start to finish. Perfect start into turn one. Lost the lead for a few laps during the pit stop phase, but in total control. Didn't set fastest lap, got to say that. But that's only because Fernando Alonso late in the race came in on his Aston Martin, having oddly chosen a set of softs when everybody else was on hards trying to go through to the finish. The softs had gone off and he put on a new set of mediums, and it was on those tyres that he regained a few positions and set fastest lap. But Max won't worry about that. This was a consummate victory yet again. Very little to trouble him. A little bit of concern towards the end of the race about the amount of debris on the track. And there was a lot of debris. And we'll get onto that in a second. It affected the race of some of the other front runners. But let's go back to the start of the race. Max, as I say, very good into turn one. Sergio Perez kind of following him in, wanting to keep everything neat and tidy. But Fernando Alonso, of course, on the outside, looking for every opportunity. And Sergio, a little bit conservative, allowed Fernando to get too much on the outside and then get the inside run into the tight left-hander at the end of that turn one section. So it was Fernando Alonso up to second place immediately in the Aston Martin. Wow. Sergio Perez and then the two McLarens of Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. At Ferrari, meanwhile, a skirmish. Neither driver very quick off the line. Charles Leclerc led Carlos Sainz into one. Carlos pulled to the outside, a little bit like Fernando Alonso. But on this occasion, Charles just basically edged him off the road. And while that was going on, George Russell and Nico Hülkenberg got in front of them. Okay, Charles very quickly repassed Nico, and they very quickly got past George. But it was a lot of time lost, using the tyres perhaps too much than they would have wanted in those first laps. And this was all a result, of course, of the Charles Leclerc Carlos Sainz dynamic with which Ferrari now have to work. Yesterday, we saw Carlos Sainz probably upsetting Charles a little bit, running wide at the hairpin. Charles probably remembered that. He was now on the inside. Carlos is on the outside. And Carlos had nowhere to go. And as I say, look at the end of 2024 to see what this is all about. This is all about Carlos Sainz needing to assert himself as much as possible until he gets his deal sorted for 24. And anyway, a driver who's doing a good enough job in a team from which he should never be fired in the first place. And once you have that sort of drama going on, it does permeate throughout the team. That's what we saw today, I think, on the opening corner of the Chinese Grand Prix between those two Ferrari drivers. Meanwhile, at the front, Max Verstappen, absolutely superb in the RB20, managing the tyres on a full load of fuel, pulling away a second a lap from Fernando Alonso, effectively making it a relatively straightforward day now for Max, because there was no way Fernando was going to be able to keep up that pace. And sure enough, he was passed within two or three laps by Sergio Perez, partly because obviously the Red Bull is a quicker car than the Aston Martin, but also because Fernando pushed very hard on a full load of fuel on the medium tyre, and they very quickly went off. There was indeed a radio message from Lando Norris saying, Fernando's going so quickly on those mediums, it's good news for us, because we're sure they're going to go off. That was the gist of what he said anyway, and he was absolutely right. Fernando and George Russell were the first of the two front runners, if you like, to stop for new tyres. Fernando going onto the hard, George onto the medium, and following lap, Max Verstappen made an early stop because you can gain a lot here with the undercut. He didn't want to take any risks whatsoever. So we had Lando Norris now, with Max having gone into the pits, leading the Chinese Grand Prix and having taken it quite easy on full tanks. His medium tyres are in pretty good shape. So all of a sudden, McLaren started thinking about running a one-stop strategy, a thought that was echoed at Ferrari with Charles Leclerc. And it was interesting to see those two stopping on virtually the same lap, one triggering the other, obviously. Leclerc on lap 21, Lando lap 22. As it turned out, the Ferrari was not as quick a car as the McLaren all day, even though they were very similar in terms of top speed. So whether that was the right call for Ferrari, we'll never know. But as a result, both Lando and Charles effectively ran the same one-stop strategy, whereas the two Red Bulls ran two stoppers. Carlos had obviously used his tyres a lot more in those early phases. He lost more ground than Charles because of that turn one skirmish. And as a result, had to come in four laps earlier than Charles and ended up running a long 39-lap stint on the hard tyre in the back end of the race. And if we continue the story of that one-stop strategy, the one adopted by Lando and Charles, it enabled them to get past Sergio Perez when Perez came in for his second stop. And as a result, Sergio Perez had a relatively difficult race, always in traffic, always in dirty air. He passed Charles Leclerc to get P3. But in the late stages of the race, he was unable to do anything about Lando Norris. And that is to the credit, obviously, of McLaren and of Lando. For me, the best moment in the race was a radio message sent out to Lando Norris, which said, for low speed understeer, in other words, to try to help cure the low speed understeer, suggests using engine braking. And it was really impressive, I think, to see Lando reply, no, thank you. And that gives an insight, I think, into the touch and feel of Lando Norris. If you asked Ayrton Senna to use engine braking because he had an understeer problem, he'd look at you as if you were mad, because Ayrton was all about feeling every part of the car in a harmonious way, going down in the days of manual downshifts, going through every gear. He would not even jump a gear. So the concept of using engine braking, or indeed jamming it into gear to do something with the rear, was absolute anathema to Ayrton. And it was wonderful to hear Lando say the same thing. A driver of great touch, as I've always said, tremendous feel, tremendous softness of touch and suppleness Lando has, and feel for racing. I just wish he wanted to make his corners a little bit shorter watching other drivers around him. But I don't think he'll ever do that, because he's so good at what he does, he's just going to stick with it. And it's paying off, a little bit like Carlos Sainz, if you take away a few of the errors from Carlos, recent errors, well, this weekend. But Lando, really, really nice, I thought, in that response. And that, in many ways, summed up his drive in China. Wonderful use of the tyres, very, very soft in everything he did. And that's what was required today to get the best from the tyres. Should just add here that Oscar Piastri drove very well, I thought, in the early phase of the race, but then somehow got massive floor damage over debris somewhere. I mentioned debris earlier. There's a lot of it on the track, a lot of dramas going on midfield, back of the field as well, particularly at restarts after the safety cars. A lot of debris, and Oscar got a lot. And here, I'm jumping around a little bit, but I might as well say it. The back end of the race, Lewis Hamilton, who'd started on soft tyres, predictably Mercedes, well, we got a car near the back, we might as well just roll the dice and put it on a different set of tyres to everybody else. So Lewis started on the softs, which he didn't really like. I mean, with about four laps, he was saying, these tyres aren't giving me any help at all. And he came in quite quickly to switch to mediums. And then he was really good. And the car wasn't great, obviously. It wasn't perfect balance, but he was doing well, and he passed a lot of cars, and he was good in DRS, and generally looked like Lewis Hamilton driving the sort of race he would from where he was on the grid. But late in the race, he was within touching distance of Oscar Piastri, within 4 seconds or so. And they both had the same tyre life at that point on the hard tyre, but Lewis could do nothing about Oscar Piastri. Okay, Lewis didn't have a perfect balance, but Oscar Piastri was in quite a badly damaged McLaren, really having to look after the back end of the car as well, nursing the rear tyres. And he beat Lewis in that situation. So that, I'm not saying that's an Oscar Piastri-Lewis Hamilton comparison, but what I am saying, that is a McLaren, well, it's more a statement of where Mercedes are, because there's no way in the world, really, Lewis should have got beaten by Oscar today, given the state that Oscar's car was in. And I mean, Lewis drove well, and there's no doubt he got the best from the car throughout the day, I think. But what I'm saying is that Mercedes is a very, very difficult car to drive, quite obviously. George Russell did a good job after making Q3 and qualifying, started P8, finished P6, more of a damage limitation day, really, just trying to get the tyres to last the distance, which he did very well in his usual way. But one of the other highlights, actually, was towards the end of the race when Fernando was on those medium tyres, those new medium tyres, en route to setting fastest lap, mainly because, amazingly, they'd actually run out of hard tyres and there were no other choices. And he came out of the last corner, turn 16, where Carlos Sainz had the big moment yesterday and spun across the track into the inside barrier. Fernando came out of that 16, obviously needed a little bit more road. Had there been curb there, he would have just gone up on the curb. But there isn't curb there, there's gravel. So he hit the gravel and the car just snapped sideways, as it did for Carlos. But on this occasion, Fernando caught it and just came back. And milliseconds later, DRS, and he was just off. The race continued for him. And we saw a replay, cockpit onboard replay of Fernando. And if you just watch, if you can see that again, you must watch it. You just watch only his hands on the steering wheel. And you just see this blur of correction. It is the most phenomenal thing. I've talked a lot about Fernando. And there's a couple of odd things about him. His initial steering input, and he's not the shortest corner driver in the world. Not that that's an issue, but he's just not ever in that area where Max likes to go, or Lewis periodically. But he does have this unbelievable feel and touch, particularly his footwork and handwork. And the handwork on this correction was just like a blur, boom, 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 like that. And you blink and you missed it. And from outside, you just saw the Aston Martin going like that. And just brilliant. That is, those moments are what make Formula One worth watching, I think. And a lot of people might be switching off at the moment because of the Max Verstappen domination. All they want to see is different winners, close racing. But in reality, it is that sort of detail that for me makes Formula One so enthralling, just to see that handwork. On the other side of the coin, this is Fernando and Aston back in the garage. And I should leave Fernando out of this because I don't know the real facts. But if you get back into the garage now, I was absolutely astonished after the miracle of Carlos Sainz yesterday hitting that barrier. And you've got to say here, maybe his handwork wasn't quite as quick as Fernando's, and that's maybe why he ended up there. But he did do a great job of broadsiding the car into the barrier. Very nice bit of drifting work by Carlos Sainz. But after that, I was enthralled by how well they got that car back into the garage, that Carlos kept going, drove it back, kept everything right, temperatures didn't go off the clock, got into the garage, and within a couple of minutes, Ferrari had the car ready to do the second run in Q2 and got him right up there, right behind Charles on the grid. Unbelievable piece of work. That can only be celebrated as part of Formula One's very rich tapestry, that teams can perform like that, that drivers can do that, and despite making that sort of error and hitting a barrier, you can then go out and do that sort of lap time. Unbelievable. And I was completely shocked, and this happened after we posted the video yesterday, that Aston Martin put in a protest about all that on the basis that once the car stops, it's gone off the track, you're not allowed to restart it and continue. And bearing in mind it took no time out of the delay, in other words, they were still fixing the barrier while Carlos did all this and drove back to the pits, and bearing in mind how impressive that was as an advertisement for how good Formula One is, I was astonished that they did that. I mean, talk about damp squib. Talk about, I don't know what, really. I mean, I'm very pleased that that protest was thrown out. It wasn't a great weekend for the FIA for a number of reasons. We'll get on to another one later in the vid, but at the end of the race. And I'm pleased that this was thrown out because their argument was absolutely to the letter of the rule, whereas the stewards decided that there was precedent of other drivers having stopped and then driven back to the pits, A and B. The essence of the regulation is not to prevent drivers doing that anyway. And so it was thrown out, and that's good. But I just thought it was very churlish of Aston Martin to do that. I'm sure Fernando had nothing to do with it at all. Nothing about being passed by Carlos on the outside of Turn 7 in the sprint race and then the little shunt that happened afterwards and the 3 penalty points he got. I'm sure Fernando was way away from all of that. He never gets involved in politics, he says with a smile. But anyway, yeah, you know, I'm pleased that that was thrown out. But I've got to go back to that Fernando catch coming out of 16. Because apart from anything else, to get the opposite lock on at exactly the right amount and exactly the right rate and not to have any snapback was just poetry in motion. But it was very fast poetry in very fast motion. Anyway, Fernando finished seventh, and he will have said he got the best from the car. I suppose the criticism you'd make is that he just went too hard too early on that set of mediums, came in a bit too early. He could maybe have run a one-stop strategy as well had he not done that. But then telling Fernando not to push hard in the early laps, telling him not to be aggressive getting to the first corner, is a bit like telling Ayrton Senna to miss a downshift on under braking. Never going to happen. Just going back to that protest from Aston Martin, as I say, I'm glad it was dismissed, so that was a good thing. But we did have that drama in qualifying when Lando Norris's pole time was taken away and then given back to him, which wasn't great. But it wasn't a good weekend for the FIA overall, because after the checkered flag, and quite obviously Max Verstappen had won it, all the timing systems showed Lando Norris as the winner of the race. Now, whether that was wishful thinking by somebody there, I've no idea, but it stayed up on all the timing systems that I could see for at least 5 minutes, Lando Norris having won that race from Sergio Perez and Max Verstappen, all with correct race times and everything else. Everybody was thinking, I mean, this is the moment when all the big TV companies in the world, all the news agencies, they're all looking at who won this race. They're all seeing Lando Norris won the race. As I say, probably wishful thinking by a lot of people. It took them about 5 minutes before Max was reinstated in terms of the timing back to his rightful position. So I think you can come away from this Chinese Grand Prix thinking there are quite a lot of loose ends that need to be tied up and tidied up at the FIA at the moment in various areas. But just to repeat the point, I'm very pleased that that Aston Martin protest was thrown out. That is for sure. Ferrari finished fourth and fifth. Eventually, as I say, Charles mirrored Lando Norris's one-stop strategy, but back into the race was nothing like as quick. As I said yesterday, it looked to me as if Ferrari never, ever got that car right in that one-hour session in which they were working on it like everybody else. McLaren got it more or less right. Aston Martin got it more or less right. Ferrari did not get it right this weekend. So it was a difficult weekend for them, fourth and fifth. Carlos Sainz wouldn't be happy with fifth place at all, particularly what happened in the first lap. But nonetheless, he was fifth in the end. The car didn't have a lot of grip, didn't have a lot of balance. But given where he was after 3 or 4 minutes of Q2 yesterday, I think he'd be quite happy to take P5. Lewis eventually made it up to ninth, so at least some points, and he can go home thinking, wow, second in the sprint, ninth in the Grand Prix, making progress. And Nico Hülkenberg, again, bringing a Haas Ferrari home in the points. Wow, let's hear it from them. Some amazing racing midfield, back of the field, whatever you want to call it. Nico Hülkenberg, Kevin Magnussen, horrendous restart shunt involving Lance Stroll doing one of his things where he just cannons into the car in front of him as they're all braking for the hairpin and then blaming everybody else. But and Daniel Ricciardo, who'd driven very well, looked like potentially possibly being in the points, having to retire as a result of that. And Guanyu Zhou finished 13th. And first time I've seen this, but you know how the first three you just pull up on the track at the end of the race to be interviewed? They actually had a slot for Guanyu Zhou as well. Let's hear it for the local heroes. I wonder if Liberty have taken any note of my suggestion of several years ago now, but I keep coming back to it periodically, that we should have third cars in Formula One. They should be controlled, but they should be when there's a great local driver that can be given, that can do a lot for the promotion of the race. Okay, we have Guanyu Zhou, but don't forget we had Yifei Ye as well, and to me he was just as talented as Guanyu, and I feel a bit sorry for Yifei because he never had the money, unlike Guanyu, to go through the feeder series. And very talented guy, doing very well now in World Endurance. But there's another Chinese driver. And if we had two of them, it would have been even better than one. Anyway, it was a capacity crowd. For what that means, not a lot of grandstands in Shanghai. I'm not trying to be dampening, not trying to be negative there, but that Tilke circuit isn't built with massive expectation of huge crowds. There's the grandstands in the pit area. There's the grandstands around the hairpin braking area. And that's about it. Yep, they filled all those, so good job. And that's because of Guanyu Zhou primarily, I think. Alpine kind of kept going as well, which was good. They didn't finish in the points, but Esteban Ocon, quite impressive in the back end of the race, doing very well. Pierre Gasly had a sort of difficult race. And at one point in the pits, we saw the right rear coming off in a pit stop. Terrible, terrible to see that. I know what that's like, Pierre, so don't say any more. It's usually a result of somebody assuming that something else is right. And it's interesting that it happened back in the 90s and it can still happen today. And I felt a bit sorry, I have to say, for Valtteri Bottas. He'd driven well all weekend, got into Q3 with the Sauber, as we say. But then the Ferrari engine just unaccountably let go and brought out the first safety car. He parked it on the outside. And for a while, the cars were sort of, they were under yellow there, but going quite quickly with him just unprotected getting out of the car. But very quickly, they put out virtual safety car and then safety car as well. So Valtteri didn't finish. Engine failure. Don't see many of those these days, amazingly. Nothing, it seems, can touch, though, the Red Bull steamroller. Max Verstappen winning again. What a fabulous win. Lando Norris on the podium again. Getting quite monotonous with Lando as well. At some point, Lando's going to win a Grand Prix. It may even be in the near future, but very, very good drive by him. I think he got Driver of the Day for that. And I would have given him Driver of the Day purely for that comment about not wanting to use engine braking. I'm surprised they haven't discussed that. But, well, they probably have discussed it, actually, because the tone of Lando's voice was, you could tell he was smiling when he said, no, thank you. So it's obviously something they talked about in a debrief. I don't really like to use engine braking. So that was good. And so there we are. Yeah. End of this very, very tiring...